Hey, fellow Okies and all true crime enthusiasts, Cece here, and I'm the host, writer, and producer of this, the Sooner State True Crime Podcast. Welcome, everybody, to the third episode of the show, The Murder of Taylor Heiselman. This 17-year-old young man was kidnapped and executed by men he trusted. He was also betrayed by many witnesses who were able to possibly save his young life. Be sure y'all subscribe to Sooner State True Crime in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever podcast app you prefer. That way, you never miss a new upcoming episode. Also, follow us on Twitter at Crime State, like us on Facebook at OK Crime State, and I'd love to hear your comments and case suggestions. So check our show notes for my email, a voicemail link, and everything Sooner State True Crime, including our website that lists the sources used for this episode and all others. If you're enjoying this new podcast and would like to ensure new content, please donate by going to paypal.me/crimestate. Thanks, y'all. Now, let's get into our case for this show, the murder of 17-year-old Taylor Heiselman. Come away with me to May of 2005 to the south side of Oklahoma City, where 17-year-old Taylor Heiselman was kidnapped and executed. Taylor Don Heiselman was born on August 4th, 1987, to his adoring parents, Randy and LaDonna Heiselman. Taylor was one of three boys, and his brothers, Brandon and Chase, always appreciated Taylor's fun-loving spirit. Taylor was also survived by his grandparents, aunts, uncles, and cousins, who all loved him dearly. Taylor and his family grew up in Midwest City, Oklahoma, which is a suburb just east of Oklahoma City. Taylor had a great sense of humor and a beautiful smile. His favorite activities included going to an amusement park, the beach, the lake, playing the drums, and listening to music. Taylor was an honor student and even graduated a year early in order to get a jump start on studying engineering in order to design his own roller coaster one day. Taylor met the Lord on May 16th, 2005. In 2005, Taylor Heiselman was 17 years old and living with an older man named William Ross Nelson, his wife Amy, and their children. According to court documents, Nelson later told police that he wanted Taylor out of his home due to Nelson allegedly catching Heiselman selling drugs in the residence. Nelson also alleged that he was upset with Taylor for the amount of time he was spending with his oldest stepdaughter. Nelson later said, quote, "I didn't particularly trust Taylor around my oldest stepdaughter or her friends." The girlfriend of one of the suspects later testified that Nelson's oldest stepdaughter was angry at Heiselman, quote, "for telling people lies about them being together sexually." The woman also stated she overheard the daughter say that Taylor needed to have his ass kicked. Nelson, upset about the drugs and his stepdaughter, recruited his friends, 20-year-old Jerome Blake Booth and 22-year-old Michael Amame, aka Mexican Mike, to assist him with Taylor. Nelson later testified that he saw Amami place adhesive tape over Taylor's mouth and wrists in Taylor's bedroom. Nelson also told investigators that once Heiselman was bound, Booth and Amami searched Taylor's bedroom for drugs. Despite Nelson's admission to using meth prior to Booth and Amami arriving that day, Nelson had to pull Amami off of Taylor due to him striking the teen. Earlier that day, Booth had complained to Nelson about the quality of Heiselman's drugs and an increase in price. Nelson used Booth's frustrations with Heiselman to his deadly advantage. Teresa Deeds, a 40-year-old Oklahoma City woman, later testified about the final hours of Taylor's life. Deeds described the evening of May 15th and the morning of the 16th when Deeds, Booth, Amami, Heiselman, Nelson and his wife Amy, and their family were all at the Nelson home in the 1000 block of Southwest 81st Street in Oklahoma City. Deeds testified that Heiselman was, quote, rather beat up the morning of May 16th in Booth's apartment, and she said, quote, he had a black eye, busted lip, and his face was rather swollen. Once Booth and Amami had bound, beaten, drugged, robbed, and injected the teen boy with insulin, the men loaded Taylor into his own car and left Nelson's home. Nelson claimed that the group later drove back by his home and that Taylor was calmly sitting in the back seat of his own car. All three men were under the influence of drugs at the time. Nelson also told police that he spoke to Booth on his cell phone after they left with Taylor, and he told him he was going to drop Taylor off somewhere on the side of the road. The truth of the situation was, however, that Taylor had been kidnapped and was being driven to his death. Deeds testified that on May 16th, a woman named Brandy led Taylor out of Booth's apartment, and Amami and Booth shortly followed. Eventually, Booth drove Taylor to a location off South Portland Avenue in Cleveland County, Oklahoma, where a blindfolded, beaten, and possibly even hit by a car, 17-year-old Taylor Heiselman was then executed by a shot to his temple and another to his upper back. A passing motorist would discover Taylor's body the next day, May 17th, and call police. Deeds later said in court that she did not learn about Taylor's death until she, Brandy, Booth, and Amami were arrested for drug charges in Louisiana while fleeing to Florida. Nelson admitted he did not call police at any time during Heiselman's kidnapping or murder, and he denied having any knowledge of the crime when first approached by police. The next day, Nelson's story changed, and he now claimed he was just too scared to talk to police for fear of Booth's retaliation. Nelson said, quote, I should have called Sunday evening. I should have done a lot of things I didn't do because I was scared. Nelson was also accused of helping to dispose of Taylor's personal belongings and the gun used to execute him. Police, luckily, were able to identify suspects in the murder very quickly. William Ross Nelson's actions the day Taylor's body was found raise even more concerns surrounding Taylor's roommate. Taylor's mother, LaDonna Heiselman, told reporters that, quote, Mr. Nelson called me the day we found out that Taylor had been murdered. He knew things that hadn't been released yet. From the first call, I knew he was involved. She also stated Nelson had given, quote, inconsistent accounts of the incident. She explained her theory of the motive as, quote, I think he was using Taylor to help in his drug business, and Taylor was going to get out of it and move home. Nelson wasn't going to let that happen with all that Taylor knew, and he had Taylor killed. LaDonna also told a reporter that Nelson had admitted guilt before by telling a co-worker the day after Taylor's murder that his roommate was not coming back. The day after Taylor's murder, Nelson also called Mrs. Heiselman and told her that he and Taylor had a disagreement and that Taylor had, quote, packed up and moved out. But later, Mrs. Heiselman said she collected, quote, a multitude of Taylor's clothes and personal belongings from Nelson's home, including a childhood pillow of hers that had a lot of sentimental value. Quote, it was obvious that Taylor hadn't packed up his own things, Mrs. H. said. Jerome Blake Booth, who was 20 years old at the time of the murder, and Michael Amami, known as Mexican Mike, were both originally charged with the first-degree murder of Taylor Heiselman. William Nelson, however, had an indirect path to justice for Taylor, despite his direct involvement. Mrs. Heiselman said, quote, "Taylor died a very violent death. Nelson planned it. He brought others in. He convinced them to do it. Not only did he take my son's life, but he also ruined Booth and Amami's lives. Their family should be outraged." A witness during a preliminary hearing named Derek Self testified that his girlfriend, Christy Taylor, worked at Centerfold Strip Club off I-240 in Oklahoma City, where Heiselman's roommate also worked. Self stated that Taylor's roommate, William Nelson, asked him for a ride from the club on May 16, 2005 because, quote, "something was wrong with his wife." Self also said the two men picked up Blake Booth, who was on foot, shortly after leaving the club. Self testified Booth had a pistol and Nelson wanted to get rid of it. Self, who claimed he had worked as a military police officer previously, volunteered to take the gun and hide it under a log on a farm near Tuttle. Self claimed he was scared of Booth and Nelson when he agreed to help hide the gun, but a few days later, he did go to an attorney, Robert Manchester, who contacted police regarding the pistol. During the same prelim hearing, another 21-year-old man named Michael Don Payton testified that Booth came to his apartment complex the day Taylor's body was found. Payton said the two men were talking, and Booth said he, quote, "had to go take care of someone," and that Booth showed him a pistol and two syringes filled with an unknown liquid, possibly insulin. Payton also testified that Booth was driving a maroon Mitsubishi Eclipse, about a 2003 model, the same car that Taylor drove. On May 20, 2005, Oklahoma City police arrested an 18-year-old man named Eric for possession of a stolen vehicle. Eric told police that Booth had given him the car and its keys. In May of 2006, a year after Taylor's murder, Jerome Blake Booth pled guilty to first-degree murder and was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. But before he was sentenced, LaDonna Heiselman thanked the court and the prosecutors and read a poem she wrote her son. Booth said in court, quote, "I have a little brother and his name is Taylor too. I don't know what I would do if he died. I am sorry." Booth stood, faced Taylor's family, and said he was sorry again several times before he sat down and cried. In January of 2007, Michael Amame pled guilty to an amended charge of accessory to kidnapping and received a 5-year suspended sentence, meaning no prison time for his role in the kidnapping of Taylor Heiselman. Amami's charge was reduced from a first-degree murder charge after alibi evidence proved he was not at the murder scene. The alleged mastermind of the plot against Taylor, William Nelson, was originally charged in September 2007 with accessory to first-degree murder. But in September of 2008, the charge was upgraded to first-degree murder. Cleveland County Judge Reg Gaston ruled there was enough evidence to put Nelson on trial for first-degree murder. Assistant DA Rick Siltzman alleged that Nelson, Amame, and Booth orchestrated the abduction, assault, and murder of Taylor Heiselman. However, in June of 2010, William Ross Nelson accepted a plea deal for accessory to murder, and prosecutors gave him a deal of 15 years in prison to plead guilty. Unfortunately, that meant Nelson would only actually spend less than 5 years behind bars. The Heiselman family was understandably upset and stated that the punishment does not fit the crime. The assistant DA, David Brockman, said in response to the family's grief, quote, "I fully understand the family is unhappy. I know the Heiselmans wanted more. We did what we believe is the right thing. I believe he's responsible for starting the ball rolling, but I am not prepared to say he is responsible for the actual murder. Prosecutors stated that there was evidence supporting both sides, but that a lot of witnesses were not credible due to their drug use. One win in court for the Heiselman family came on May 11, 2007. A bill which permitted the family members of victims to wear a button with the picture of the victim during their trials was signed into law by Governor Henry. Senate Bill 868, also known as Taylor's Law, allowed his mother, LaDonna Heiselman, to wear a button with the picture of her precious 17-year-old son, Taylor Don Heiselman, to face the cowards who took his life too soon. LaDonna Heiselman said after the men were sentenced, quote, "One by one, they've charged the three people responsible for Taylor's death. Of course, there's a few more I'd like to see charged, but I don't know if that will happen or not." Thanks, y'all, so much for listening to our mini episode over Taylor Heiselman. I wanted to cover Taylor's case because of my own connection to Mrs. Heiselman in my daily life here in Oklahoma City, but also because this case is very alarming and scary. If anything can be learned, I believe, unfortunately, from this case, it is that you just may never really know some people in your life. I am certain Taylor most likely trusted these men, especially being only 17 years old, under the influence of drugs, and also being influenced by these older drug addicts. But I also wanted to touch on the complete and utter failure of the other witnesses involved in this case. They each had at least 12 hours to call police or do anything to try and stop this unnecessary tragedy. I also personally believe the justice system failed here some too. I believe Imami and Nelson got off way too easy. But let me know what y'all think. Email me at soonerstatecrimepod@gmail.com or tweet me at crimestate, or you can send me a voicemail on our website, anchor.fm/crime-state. Thank you so much for listening, y'all. Please subscribe so you don't miss any of our upcoming new episodes or everything Sooner State True Crime. My sources for this episode are listed in the show notes. And everybody, please stay Sooner Safe out there, y'all. Until next time.